The Science Basement!
Hello and welcome to the Science Basement Podcast, a podcast for people who love all things science. I'm your host, Eleana.
And I'm your co-host, Anastasia.
This is the fourth episode of our mini-series with the Helsinki Institute for Life Science, in short, HiLife, which is one of the major life science institutes in the Nordics. In this episode, we are joined with Juha Huiskonen, a professor of structural biology and director of the Institute of Biotechnology at the Viki campus of the University of Helsinki, and with Maria Vartiainen, a group leader and HiLife deputy director for research and infrastructures. Both joined us today to delve into the important topic of supporting the research community through leadership and infrastructures.
And already in the first episode with HiLife, Professor Jari Kuestunaho, head of HiLife, briefly touched upon the importance of leadership and emphasized that developing infrastructures is really tightly connected to good leadership practices. So today, it is an excellent opportunity to unwrap this topic further. Jari also mentioned that HiLife spends about 5 million euros a year for infrastructures. Is that right, Eliana?
Well, if my memory doesn't deceive me, this is about the amount of money I remember. Definitely, it was a big chunk of the annual budget, indeed. But without further ado, welcome Juho and welcome Maria, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Perhaps we can start the discussion first with the journey through academic leadership. So how do we go from managing our own group, ourselves, actually, first and foremost, then our own group, and then a large group of people such as the Institute of Biotechnology?
When your role changes to a new level, I think it's a really good opportunity to really evaluate why you are doing what you are doing, right? And is what you are doing, is it really based on your values? So what are my values, and am I acting accordingly in this role? And is the direction of the research group or the core facility or the entire institute, is it aligned with my values? Or, you know, am I being driven purely by my ego? We all have one, but is that the main thing driving me? Or am I starting to see the bigger picture and the needs of others and my own role in helping others to reach their full potential? So I think this is kind of the reality check for any new director in their new role to really first look inside and kind of evaluate our values.
I also think that you need to maybe adapt your thinking a bit because the role is new. So previously you are just kind of a responsible of yourself, but then suddenly you need to be responsible of others. And it's not the same thing as leading yourself. So I think that you need to kind of change also your thinking a bit when you start leading a group, whether it's a small or a big one.
Absolutely. And I like two things that you mentioned. The first one is, like Juha, you said that when you make a decision, you need to consider, am I making that decision because of my own ego, or am I putting the welfare or the interests, in this case, of others into the equation? And also you, Maria, highlighted how you need to realize that before you were only responsible for yourself, now you are responsible for others. And this takes a set of skills to be able to achieve. So, Maria, what are the most important skills you think that a group leader should have, and how do they evolve?
I think communication is really a key skill of being a leader at any level. So you need to be able to communicate your values and to inspire people and motivate them. And also to remember that the communication is a two-way street. It doesn't help if you tell people how to do things. You also need to listen to them and how they actually want to be led. I think this is the key to remember, that the communication needs to go both ways.
Yeah, I fully agree. Leadership is mainly about communication. And about this looking inside when you are in a new role, you really need to be honest, what are my skills? We don't really have formal training in management or leadership, typically as academic leaders. Only very few of us have this kind of training. Really to evaluate, where do I need to improve as a leader in my new role? And then really put in the effort to acquire these new skills. You can, of course, try and simply learn by doing, but it can be pretty costly. You might make mistakes. So it's better to find a mentor, attend some leadership training, then you might avoid some mistakes.
Indeed, I would expect lots of mistakes because, like in any other job or any other opportunity we get that's new to us, mistakes aren't unavoidable. And I think just important to not get very discouraged by this, but also it's extremely difficult to sort of balance out needs of all the people, of all the different kinds of characters, of all the different kinds of ambitions. And we all want as leaders to keep as many people happy as possible. But do you think it's achievable?
No, you cannot make everyone happy. And you also need to take care of yourself and your own happiness. But you need to be fair and you need to find a balance and you need to act according to your values and stand behind even the difficult decisions that you sometimes have to make as a leader.
What would be the ways or at least balance this out?
Again, it's about communication, that if there's a difficult decision to make and you can expect that it will have an impact on people's happiness or people might not first accept a difficult decision, you need to be able to explain to people why. In this situation that we need to go in a certain, perhaps uncomfortable direction. For example, it can be about resources and we need to communicate the situation openly and then act according to our values.
And usually if you just speak openly about even difficult things and you let everyone basically voice their concerns, already this ability that everyone gets heard, that helps especially with the difficult situations.
This already started introducing the next question I wanted to ask, which is about whether one is a junior PI or an institute director. They need to ensure that their group is happy and working to their full potential and that the whole environment is productive. So what approach do you follow to achieve this? Because communication is, of course, fundamental, but sometimes there might be a bit of a push from the other side. So how can you achieve this very productive and positive atmosphere?
Happy and productive people, this is of course a goal that's very easy to agree with. And of course, these are related. Happy people are more productive than unhappy people. That is clear. When people are happy and motivated, they can really reach goals and results and innovations that we might have not anticipated first. So really promoting and supporting a working culture, an environment that increases happiness is really the key here. But how to do this, that is the big question. And I think it's possible with good leadership.
And good communication. And also giving the people the chance to affect their own work. Because at university, most of the people are quite smart. So they know how to do things. So we leaders, we shouldn't really micromanage things too much, but give kind of a responsibility to the people on how they want to organize their work.
I absolutely agree with that. I find that there are these kind of different types of leadership styles we learn at a course, at least the one I attended. You lead from the front and essentially you have a lot of control of what is happening, and then you lead from side to side, where especially when you acknowledge that a colleague is of equal experience and skills, then you give them also gradually more liberty to make decisions themselves, and then you lead from behind. And this resonates with what you just mentioned, Maria. You need to give the opportunity to people because they have the skills and the knowledge to be able to not be given every task in a detailed to-do list, but to have the ability to develop their own way of advancing it.
Absolutely agree, but also want to add that I think it's beneficial not only for the individuals to make them feel happy and satisfied at the workplace, but also for the institute itself, because it really boosts the creativity of people when they feel like they're being heard and that they can express their own ideas. So in this way, I think it's really beneficial for both sides. But of course, you need to communicate and you try to communicate with as many people as possible. Though in this big institute, there's so many people. How do you manage to hear so many people at the same time?
Well, for research groups, of course, regular group meetings are super important, and also one-to-one meetings. As institute's director, for me, it's not possible to meet with everyone one-on-one. There's sometimes an email, you know, is the right way to do, but of course, that's a one-way communication. So what we have been doing with Maria is to meet with different staff groups so that, for example, all the technicians have an opportunity to come and discuss with us, ask questions, but also make concrete suggestions how to improve the situation that they can affect their own work tasks. And the same is true for PhD researchers, postdocs, staff scientists. So we have these yearly meetings, and a lot of good ideas come from these meetings. Of course, then somebody has to implement all these good ideas, and that's then about management, and then we take it to a different level. But that everyone can participate and feel that they are heard, and actually these good ideas are implemented if possible. That is the approach that we have taken.
I have a follow-up question to that, because you mentioned that you will approach the PhDs and the postdocs in groups. But my question is this. Usually when you are at that stage of your career and you have an immediate supervisor who is the PI of the project that employs you, that is an automatic barrier that maybe even when your supervisor is not present, you still might not feel comfortable to openly speak about whether there is an existing problem. And so I imagine like an institute leader or a big group leader will need to find ways to bring forth all the problems that PhDs and postdocs might be facing, and they are not having the courage to say because they're afraid of their position, etc., etc. So how can that be managed?
I think a big part of that is training of the group leaders. So we put a lot of effort in, first of all, reminding about all the opportunities university has for research group leaders to support them in their leadership work. And we've also invited external parties, for example, EMBO lab leadership course is something we arranged last year. And really promoting the culture also amongst the group leaders and understanding that when you give that autonomy to even not just the colleagues who are already quite experienced, but starting from master students, they can explore their own ideas, and that's where they can actually get to the next level, not just repeating the mundane tasks. One part of that is really to make people to understand that when delegating something, ideally you delegate a task where the person can grow. It's an opportunity to learn something new and exceed your current understanding or competence. And in these cases, it's really fantastic to see how PhD researchers, for example, are really achieving something they thought might not be even possible.
Yeah, I agree with Juha. Educating the group leaders is maybe the most important task, because the group leaders, they set the atmosphere and also the working culture in their group that then spreads downwards. But at the same time, I think that these meetings with the different staff groups, hopefully they will make both me and Juha more familiar to the people, and that would lower the barrier for them to then actually come and talk to either of us if there are something that they don't want to share with their group leader.
I also wanted to point out that from my experience from Kumpula campus, there are all these courses for leadership, for supervision, which is not about being a PhD thesis or master thesis supervisor, but it's more about supervising your group or your unit as a PI. Usually the people who care to improve, they are the ones who attend them. And these people are usually the ones who their employees wouldn't have a problem with them. But unfortunately, the people who need, they don't go to attend these courses, and everything has to be up to their free choice. Nothing is obligatory.
We do recognize this issue, yes, that those who should take the courses, they don't, or we can't really
enforce it. Yeah. It's a concern I have a lot. It's like, how do we encourage them to take the course and fix the problem?
I would add to that maybe also making them regular, maybe not every year, but every other year or something, because some things might be just forgotten. And then it's nice to go back. But yes, we've been just going around circles on the communication part, and I think it is really in the core of most of the relationship, and this is really the only way for us to understand each other. But this also provides an opportunity for you as people at the leading front to hear the needs of other people. And I guess there would be a very nice transition towards the infrastructures, because, well, how else will we know what the community needs other than listening to their requests? My question, I guess, would be, how do you usually communicate with the community to figure out the more technical parts, more mundane things like which equipment to order or which facility to establish?
Maybe I would start by saying that pretty much everything we do when it comes to the excellence in science or providing these cutting-edge infrastructures, it's based on data, and that comes from evaluation. So it's based on international expert evaluation, and that's how we develop our operations based on that data.
Yes, so similarly, the HiLife research infrastructure platforms, they are formed based on external evaluation. But as an important part of that external evaluation, there is a user survey that asks how the current platforms are operating, but also what is perhaps missing? So this is a very direct way of getting the feedback from the community at least every 4 years when these assessments are carried out.
And so you have the external assessment, you have the feedback from the community, and then you need to make a decision about the infrastructures so that they serve you for a foreseeable amount of time, because I guess they cost a bit of money. So how do you prioritize that?
So the decisions are made by the external panel recommendations. Like all other high life operations, it's up to external evaluation, because we can't really objectively evaluate internal matters at the university.
That is understandable.
Who are these people exactly?
So in the High Life Research Infrastructure Assessment Panel, we have really experts on running core facilities in a really good European university. So these are really experts in this matter.
And they will be impartial because they're not directly involved with, let's say, exact needs and research done here. They are experts in the broader area of research, but they are not going to benefit from those infrastructures, so they can make a more impartial decision.
Yes, exactly. And because they come from really top universities in Europe and elsewhere, so they really know what is the state of the art in these different technologies.
But what if I, as an individual, for example, wanted to have some kind of service or, I don't know, order a new microscope or something? Is there a way for me to at least submit an idea so that it would be considered?
You can, of course, always answer the user survey, which I hope you will do in the autumn when this comes open again. And then you should really talk to the core facility. So all the core facilities, they listen to the needs of the users, and these are then taken into account in the next equipment acquisitions.
Awesome.
So these infrastructures are both supported from the High Life top level, but also the High Life operative units, Institute of Biotechnology, support directly also. And that can be also then based on more of the institute's own strategy. For example, in our institute, we have certain focus areas such as structural biology and biological imaging, proteomics, genomics, and this is what our own researchers also really need. So it's a balance of serving the entire community nationally, sometimes also Europe-wide, and then also looking at the needs of the local users. So it's a balance between these two.
So if I understand right, like here you have some infrastructures, but you may need to have access to more facilities. To build them here might cost money. They may not be approved by the panel, but being part of High Life, it means you have access to the infrastructures of the entire network.
Yeah, pretty much. So all these core facilities, they are absolutely open that anyone can come and use first come, first served basis. And there's often, of course, a user fee associated with it, but in principle, they are open for everyone.
Yes, indeed. For the High Life platforms, that's one of the key operating principles, that they are open to everyone. Also for example, companies, so not just university users.
But this could be used also in advantage for each institute, because then you don't necessarily need to overlap some of the equipments or facilities that already exist in other ones, and you can coordinate between each other what to have and what not to have.
Indeed, that's a very important point of the High Life platforms. So the platforms are kind of a thematic entities that bring together kind of a similar type of services across the University of Helsinki. But it also ensures that we are not having exactly the same equipment, for example, on the Viikki campus and on the Meilahti campus, but that we have spearhead technologies on the different campuses that are then dependent on the research that are done on different sites.
Now, I have to ask a dummy question, because I come from the field of space physics. We work a lot with telescopes, and there are the teams that they manage the telescope. They have access to the data and the instrument all the time. But also there is what we call an observational campaign, where I could apply for with a small application and say I would like to use that facility for a given amount of time. And then there will be some committee assessing whether my proposal is good, and they will give me access to the facility. But here, Juho, you mentioned that it is first come, first served, in a sense. So does that apply to people working within High Life or also to the companies you mentioned?
Yeah, it applies to everyone. Of course, it's in the interest of everyone that the measurement time is used wisely. So often the core facility staff, they will have a meeting about the project. Then, is this the right microscope, for example, for this question? But if everything is aligned and makes sense, then people apply time and then they get the slot when there is availability.
just having like flashbacks to fully booked microscopy rooms and stuff like that. So yeah, I can definitely agree that the coordination between people and their bookings is important. Yeah, and also to Maria's comment about different campuses, just to add very quickly that it plays to our advantage that we live in Helsinki city, which is rather small compared to other capitals. So it's very easy to navigate. And like in case I need some urgent experiment in one campus, I can quickly go to the other campus in the same day.
Yeah, we have to work together on this. And that goes back to my comment about ego in the beginning, that it's not the intention to have the biggest microscope close to one's own lab, but really have this service mentality and common working principles. And these are the values that High Life is promoting and trying to spread more widely in the university.
Yeah, and this can help research go further because the more kind of facilities are available around you, as Anastasia mentioned, you can go to another campus, etc., etc., then the more likely is that your research will progress fast and then you will move to the new idea. And that will bring more funding naturally to the institute because of all the productivity that is created.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe to mention here that so High Life coordinates the infrastructures here at the University of Helsinki, but BioCenter Finland has been coordinating the research infrastructures at the Finnish level already for a much longer time than High Life has existed. And already there we have tried to make some job sharing so that we wouldn't develop similar techniques in every university city of Finland. Because, I mean, we are a small country, so we have limited resources, so we really should share these resources wisely.
This is excellent to hear because it goes back to what we were mentioning earlier about creating this positive community and work environment. And if you are in a country where the competition is already within the country, that works negative for everyone in a specific research field in that country. But now, as you said, there is a coordination so that people will complement each other's research interests without really have to fight so much with each other, as I understand. And that is a very good thing.
Sounds very impressive. I wonder if similar thing exists in other countries. It would be interesting to hear.
Yeah, it would be interesting to investigate and find out.
Maybe in some other episodes.
Yes.
Next podcast about infrastructures in general.
Around the world, right? Yeah. But we will need to have a whole series with a lot of episodes to cover all different aspects of research, no?
And I expect we'll go very technical on those ones.
Yes. That's true. So we talked quite a bit about leading a community and building a positive environment through communication and through the facilities that are provided. But perhaps to conclude this episode, have you identified a problem that urgently needs solution for ensuring that infrastructures function properly and for the benefit of the research conducted at the institute?
I think we really need to find a common way to fund these infrastructures. So currently, it's often the task of the host unit. It can be a faculty. Quite often, the large infrastructures are hosted by the High Life operative units. And that situation is becoming very difficult with the cost of rents and cost of electricity and so forth. So we need to find common ways to fund these to ensure that we have really the cutting-edge infrastructures for all to use.
Yes, and I also want to mention a specific thing, and that is the people. We talked about how expensive the core facilities can be and they consist of very expensive equipment. But the equipment is useless unless you have people who know how to operate this. This is something that I have been trying to promote a lot, is that we should really build a career path for the people who are working at the research infrastructures. Because the current job descriptions or the job titles are not really suitable. They don't describe at all the work done at these core facilities. So these people are technically highly specialized. It might take years to train a core facility personnel to properly operate the expensive equipment that help the researchers in doing the experiments. And we are really at the risk of losing these highly skilled individuals simply because we don't have suitable career path for them. And I have taken this as one of my top priorities as the High Life Deputy Director for Research Infrastructures, that this is really something that I would like to improve on, because I think that the people are really the most important thing also for the core facilities.
It's great to hear that you think about this, and I hope more people actually in these authority positions think the same way. Eliana and I already ranted about academia and lack of these more permanent positions and things like that. So I think it's not just even the core staff of the facilities, but it really permeates the whole academia overall. So I completely agree with you on this.
Yeah, I do too. And I find that this needs also like an institutional change in order to establish these permanent career paths that are missing. Both what you, Maria, said and what you have said are messages for stakeholder and high-ranking officials at the university and the government that these are issues of high importance and need to be addressed, how we fund the infrastructures, how we ensure that none of them will get damaged because of inexperienced personnel, just because we lost the experienced personnel due to lack of career paths.
For us leaders, it's also really important to communicate the big picture, really to provide the sense that we are all part of something bigger. And we are parts of course, our respective work groups, and we are part of the whole university. In the Institute of Biotechnology, our common purpose is to do fundamental research in biosciences to benefit people and environment. So this shared purpose for the group or for the entire institute is something as we leaders need to communicate over and over again to our staff. But also to have fun, for example, to have our own traditions, to celebrate all the achievements, and this is also very important.
Thank you, Juha. That is a very positive message to end this episode with. And thank you, Maria, and Juha, of course, both for joining us today. It is fascinating to see how interconnected things are when managing a big community and to highlight that leadership can be applied in a multitude of ways for the benefit of that community. And also a big thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. If you're hearing this, it means you survived till the end. Yay! Woo! We hope this episode was as insightful for you as it was for us.
And if you like the episode, just check out our previous ones. Also, don't miss the fifth one and the final one of the series. As a finishing line, we will look at the impact of the science beyond the academic community in the broader society.
Exactly. And also, do check us out on social media. You can find us on Instagram and on Twitter by the same name, The Science Basement Podcast. We really appreciate your feedback, which can help us to improve our content. And again, thank you all for listening. Have a fantastic day, and we'll see you in the next one. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
The Science Basement.
If you liked this episode, give it a thumbs up, rate us on the podcasting app of your choice, and don't forget to share it with your friends. This podcast was produced by The Science Basement, a science communication organization based in Helsinki, Finland. Interested in getting involved or being interviewed? Get in touch at podcast@thesciencebasement.org.